having access to information on college campuses. As the digital information systems arrived, we thought this would be tremendous because we found ways to get at the inside of the computer and make it hearable. And sometimes we found ways to make it brailleable. And then the developers thought up a lot of systems that weren't usable by the blind. And we've been battling away at this for some time now. In the process, we have begun sometimes with argument that has turned into partnership, and we have a partner to welcome today. From the University of Montana, in Missoula, we have the General Counsel, who was faced with the proposition of how to answer a question of providing access to information to student life for blind people on the campus, and has come to be a collaborator, a worker with us in a plan to create total accessibility on campus. Here is Lucy France.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here. I'd like to share with you this morning the University of Montana's efforts to use only accessible electronic and information technology. I'm not a big fan of acronyms, but I'm going to call it EIT when I speak because it's a mouthful. I'm going to start actually in June of 2010 because I'd like to sort of lay out the whole picture, how the government fits into this, how the National Federation of the Blind fits into this. In June of 2010, as many of you might know, the Office for Civil Rights, which is an agency of the Department of Education, who colleges and universities answer to, and the Department of Justice issued what's called a Dear Colleague letter. It's really sub-regulatory guidance, but For the recipients, legal counsels at universities, we follow it. When the government is telling us what to do, we generally pay close attention. And that Dear Colleague letter in 2010 talked about inaccessible electronic book readers. I think it really arose from, and I know, I think Jim Marks is here, my friend, who was involved in the case in Arizona involving the Kindle readers. Anyway, the letter told universities that they needed to focus on and avoid using book readers that were inaccessible to students who are blind or have low vision. Almost a year later, in May 2011, OCR issued some more guidance in the form of frequently asked questions to follow up on the Dear Colleague letter, and it made extra clear to colleges and universities, don't use EIT that is not accessible to all students. So at the university, as most universities did, when we get a Dear Colleague letter, we do some education, we write memos, we talk with leadership teams, we interpret, if a student files a grievance, we interpret the grievance seriously and make sure that we do our best to make technology accessible. But it's really a reactive sort of mode. Somebody files a grievance and then we do our best to fix the problem. So in August 2012, we got a jump start, or as we would say out west, sort of a kick in the pants, to take a comprehensive and effective steps to ensure that we don't use inaccessible EIT. This came in the form of an actual complaint from the Office for Civil Rights. The complaint alleged that the university was discriminating against its students by using inaccessible EIT, and it specified several categories of concern, including learning management system, documents scanned to websites, uncaptioned videos, library database materials, and classroom clickers. About the same time as we received the OCR complaint, an attorney representing the National Federation of the Blind contacted us on behalf of an individual student who alleged that he had been denied educational opportunities because of inaccessible EIT. Now, from a legal counsel perspective, the fun really starts. We have a threatened lawsuit, and we have the federal government telling us that we're doing lots of things wrong. So I want to say that what I really appreciated was, and this is a Lucy term, maybe it'll be coined, intelligent advocacy of really the National Federation of the Blind and its attorneys at the Brown, Goldstein, and Levy firm, particularly Sharon Krever-Weisbaum. So remember, the intelligent advocacy is a theme here. So what's the next step? The university, we do what academics do when we face a challenge. We create a task force, and we meet and figure out how to solve the problems. Well, and this is where the intelligent advocacy comes in. We got some major assistance. In mid-December of 2012, Mark Riccobono, Sharon Krever-Weisbaum, and Ken Petrie came to Montana armed with thick booklets and stick drives containing legal guidance, remediation plans from other institutions, and other resource references to help kickstart our remediation plan. If any of you are budding attorneys, and I sometimes teach at the law school, this is an excellent strategy, this advocacy, particularly when you have a common goal, providing access to all students. It's a good strategy. Give them the information that they need. I mean, it's not easy for universities with limited resources to know everything and have a plan on how to proceed with this relatively difficult problem. So we also were fortunate to have many committed and passionate people on our campus that understood technology and understood what to do. And I'll share with you one of our success stories along this journey. Our learning management system, as you recalled, was identified in the OCR complaint as being partially inaccessible. There were some things that didn't work. Our instructional designer and accessibility specialist for the system on campus immediately started working on the problem, and she created the learning management systems called Moodle. And she created an international Moodle accessibility collaboration group with the University of Montana, the University of Illinois, and Moodle Rooms to address the accessibility. This is an open source system called Moodle, and that's what we used. The group now has expanded, and it has other members, including North Carolina State University, the California State System, and many other institutions in the United States, the United Kingdom, and in Australia, where I understand Moodle originated. The group now meets biweekly using, again, technology so that everybody can access it to discuss future accessibility issues and direction for core Moodle. And these are open to the public, and I've sat in on a few, and they're really excellent. You learn so much, and I'd be happy to share the information. So I'll skip to the epilogue of our journey here. We achieved a settlement agreement with the NFB on behalf of the individual student. Part of that agreement, we agreed to provide progress reports to the NFB on our continuing progress towards resolution with the larger OCR complaint that alleged that we were systematically denying access. Again, this was, I think, intelligent and sophisticated advocacy from the university's perspective. We also are able to continue the collaboration and get the technical expertise and help that we need in order to succeed. And we continue to work with experts from the NFB who help us with some of the technical issues that arise. We also worked with the NFB on the terms of the resolution agreement with the Office for Civil Rights. And again, the common goals were to make sure that we were effective in doing what we wanted to do. And I hope they are. In March, just this last March, we finalized the resolution agreement with the Office for Civil Rights. We have it posted. We were already along with many of the provisions. We worked with our OCR local offices in Seattle, and Noelle Nightingale, again, exhibited intelligent advocacy and has been a joy to work with. I think we gained some mutual respect. I understand the layers of government and how difficult her job is and everybody there. And I think she's understood the idiosyncrasies of the university process. It's not really a top-down process. It's not like the president can say, okay, we will use accessible EIT. We have a joint governance system, and every time you raise an issue, it becomes another meeting and more meetings and a collaboration. But we're getting there. So a few words about the resolution agreement. It really shows, I think it's a comprehensive resolution agreement, and it really shows that comprehensive effort is necessary to ensure that colleges and universities use only accessible EIT. Briefly, I'll go through some of the key points of the agreement, and frankly, I think any program that's going to be effective on a college or university campus. We need policies and procedures. We need effective to show everybody how to do this. You can't, as was just mentioned, we can't just buy something and assume it's accessible. We need policies and procedures from the ground level to show all departments and anybody who's buying technology what they need to buy and what's accessible. And it's easier said than done, but we're getting there. And I think that's where the policies and procedures help. Effective grievance procedures, so that everybody knows if there is a problem, if somebody's not accessing things, it'll be handled efficiently and immediately. And that people know that there are grievance procedures and they don't need to be afraid to say this isn't working. We need procurement procedures so that we don't purchase anything that's not accessible. Training and information. Although my tip that I learned the hard way is when you're on a college campus, you don't train faculty. Faculty do not want to be trained. They want information or education sessions. So I learned that the hard way, but information to everybody so they understand how to make their classrooms accessible. We need one person. So we are lucky we have a very passionate person on our campus who, with a team of people that understand the technology, understand student life, understand academics. But one person really needs to be a point person, some kind of a coordinator, and the regulations require that. But I think that's very key, so that all the information goes to one coordinator. We're in the middle right now and have just finished the first iteration of a survey and accessibility audit. What is out there and what more do we need to do? This is very comprehensive and not that easy. And then a corrective action strategy. So let's identify the problems, which we're doing right now, and then come up with an effective correction action strategy, which hopefully with, again, more help from the NFB to figure out what we can do that's effective. In closing, we have technical experts on our campus, and we have professionals who are committed to ensuring access. We really didn't, in this process, have pushback from faculty, staff, or administration. Everybody agreed it's the right thing to do. But I can tell you it's still difficult to implement, and I think we have lots of work ahead of us. But we have come a long way from that snowy December afternoon when NFB swooped in armed with help, which I'll refer to it as help, and the sat around the table with their intelligent advocacy. And they recognize that we're a decentralized, higher education is really a decentralized process. And there's not a top-down directive that's going to work, but it really is a collaboration and information from people who are users, and the technical experts all need to work together in order to ensure that goal of universal accessibility in electronic information and technology. Thank you very much for your time.
And it is a joy to have you here. The beginning of our process of working with universities, we found a good many people who, in effect, said to us, "Why are you bothering us?" And your message is so different and so warming and so open that I think there's beginning to be a change in the atmosphere on college campuses. But I think you're helping to make the change, and I think that help is genuinely welcome, and we want very much to work with you to continue it. So thank you very much for your presentation and for your attitude to welcome us.